All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
So, Sean, you're going to tease this up today. We've got a guest joining us here shortly in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I like your little teaser for this, so I'm going to let you take it.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about a billion-dollar sales secret. So simple, it'll leave you speechless.
That's right.
A billion-dollar sales secret, so simple, it'll leave you speechless. That's the alliterated, or at least lots of S's anyway. So
sure.
We'll see if that works. But and actually, billions, you know, that's probably on the low side based on the little bit of background info I did. It's probably much higher than that.
Yeah.
We've hinted around this, but there's going to be some new angles around this idea. And our last week's guest kind of mentioned this a little bit. Mm-hmm. But this has got a lot more science behind it, a lot more research behind it. And our guest is coming on is a New York Times bestselling author. So he's done the research. And this will be a good one, I think.
He's done a lot of books.
Yeah, quite a few books. So we'll get into that when he pops on. But for now, I guess we'll jump into some beverages.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
So to bring up, let's see, let me bring up my
fancy logo
here.
Yeah.
We got to give our little sponsor a plug. There we go. Craft, the original craft beer club. You got a little surprise this week. So you sent me a little video that you did earlier today.
Yeah.
Picked up on, and we'll be posting this on our show page for this episode. A little unboxing action going, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little, thought people might want to see what it looks like when you get your first order from the original craft beer club. It's pretty cool. Pretty nice package they send you. So yeah, that'll be up on the site, I guess, later today and this weekend or sometime. And then we'll probably put a dedicated page up for it as well. But yeah, I've got a couple of beers from the original craft beer club today to feature. So
perfect.
or one anyway, and a little trivia too.
Ooh, so love the
trivia. I'll let you do the spiel and then we'll jump into the.
All right. Beer. Well, this segment of our podcast is brought to you by, as I mentioned earlier, the original craft beer club, outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the U.S. As you know, craft beers have exploded in popularity over the past decade. There are thousands of awesome craft beers being produced by so many new microbreweries. They're popping up all over the place. You just can't believe it. But one of the best ways to sample all of these unique beers by letting our friends over at the original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and tasting to bring you the best beer discoveries in the country. So we're going to help you, Sean, because he's got his sample there. He's got his box there. So he's going to be able to go through and kind of give you a sampling of what you can expect from these.
Absolutely. Guys. So I'll kick it off since we're in that vein right now.
Yep.
So today's beer from the original craft beer club, right? Let me put my podcast voice on.
You got to get up real close to the mic.
You got to get real close to some, whatever that's the ASMR, AMSR, whatever that is. So I've got today a champagne velvet beer.
Ooh.
Champagne velvet beer. This is the beer with the million-dollar flavor.
So
what's cool about the original craft beer club is, I feel like I'm keyword stuffing that phrase. I could probably tone that down a little bit. But they do send you like these documents here, these little guides on the beer and on the brewery and all this. So this is from Upland Brewing Company, which is in Bloomington, Indiana. Mm-hmm. So here's the official copy for Champagne Velvet.
This makes me think of Miller High Life. Is it Miller?
Yeah, Champagne of Beers.
Yeah, the Champagne.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah, I think it is Miller. So this is a Pilsner. It's 5.5% ABV. Originally created in 1902 by Walter Bruin, the son of German immigrants, Champagne Velvet became one of Indiana's most popular brews. Unfortunately, industrial consolidation took down this regional favorite, and the recipe went missing.
Wow.
For many years until a fan rescued the handwritten recipe. Upland reformulated and proudly brought this legend back to life. Champagne Velvet is refreshingly light and smooth with some sweet complexities. It's the perfect everyday beer.
So what happened to the recipe? You just get stuffed down a sock drawer or something?
I guess it was the first time I found it at a garage sale. You know how those things work. It's probably where it went.
That formula. Man, it finally was rediscovered.
So, yeah. So
I love that.
So what do you have over there on the other side of the country?
All right. Well, I am continuing my... my
That is light.
That is light.
Holy.
That's really light.
That's like a... that's light. It's not a light beer, though. So
I'm continuing my march towards October with a... today with a... a Highland Brewing, Clawhammer Oktoberfest. So, So we got, I will say this. So October, you know, we're seeing all these Oktoberfest beers. So they do start to come pop their head around August all the way through October. So this isn't, you know, I think a lot of places are starting to see a lot of these Oktoberfest beers. And
well, I got my my Men's Health magazine or one of those magazines yesterday, and they had a list of like Oktoberfest brews in it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, we're getting there fast. But of course, here in Austin, it's 103 today, so I'm not quite there yet.
Well, you know, here's the deal with Oktoberfest: it's not too heavy, you know.
Yeah.
And this is a Let me give you a little, let me pull up my note here. This is a Bavarian inspired, of course, this is over in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Bavarian inspired. This Märzen lager is smooth and well-rounded with a toasty malt character. 25 IBUs, 5% ABV. Not too much. So
cool.
It's got that, you know, all of these Oktoberfests have these little, you know, this
kind of that orange
ale look, kind of the pumpkin.
Like Trump ale.
Yep. That's right. Orange man. This is Orange Man beer. All right. Well, I guess now is the time to
cheers.
So we started early without our guests. We don't know if Daniel has a beverage or a libation, but he will be joining us shortly.
I haven't had a Pilsner in a while, so that's a... You know, this is pretty basic beer, right? So good old working class beer with a fancy name, Champagne Velvet.
Show me. Yeah, I always think of Miller High Life. That looks like a Miller High Life right there.
Yeah, and it does have that champagne color, so that makes sense, right? So it does have like, it mentioned like the fruity taste at the end. Mm-hmm. It definitely does have that, some sweet complexities. Again, I'm just more of a, you know, I'm more of a dark beer fan. I like dark coffee. I like dark beer. Yeah. So for me, this is, I think I could give this out of five. I'll give this 2.8.
2.8. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not bad. It's just not my style of beer.
Sure.
Necessarily. So I'll give it a 2.8. You know, maybe if you were out on the boat on the lake. Might be a little nicer, but speaking of which, we're doing the Trump boat parade next weekend.
That's gonna be huge. Yeah. Huge.
Biggest.
Does that start next Friday all through the weekend?
It's just gonna be one day for us here at Lake Travis. Okay. So,
all right. I bet that is going to be
I'll get some video
packed. Oh yeah, I'm sure there'll be people packed.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. Like, there's t-shirts for it. There's paratroopers coming in. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Weather's going to be great. Probably. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
And
it no longer rains here apparently. So,
all right. So speaking of Orange Man, my Orange Man beer is, this is actually really good. Usually you can't go wrong with a Highland. So I'm going to give this probably a 4.1. Yeah, 4.1 would be a good score.
Yeah, there's something about those Oktoberfest spices and stuff that just, you know, it's like anything with those kind of October type spices are just usually good, whether it's coffee, tea, beer, whatever.
I got to tell you, a lager or any probably lager down, like lager ale, to me is very refreshing after a after hitting the you know, the treadmill or going out for a run.
I was going to say, you look like you're still breaking a little bit of a sweat.
So I like to make affirmation on things that I'm convinced work for me. So I always, you know, I'm thinking beer is a good after workout beverage. Yeah. So obviously I'm going to do a lot of, you know, I'm going to do research to confirm that cognitive bias on my part. So I do a lot of, I research a lot of articles and say, yeah, sure. You know, so even mints, I found one on Men's Health that said, yeah, it's loaded with carbs. There's like probably
chocolate. Like chocolate.
Yep. Chocolate. Yeah. Especially if you get those cocoa nibs and all those other ingredients in there. So,
yeah. I mean, chocolate milk is like they were selling that for a while as like the perfect recovery drink, right?
Yep.
Just perfect macros, a little sweet, mm-hmm. little protein, little fat, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Like, yeah. But then again, Subway used to sell foot long loaves of bread as like a diet plan, you know?
So. That's right. That's right. I guess to show you, you can get anything to confirm what you want to believe, mm-hmm. you know? So,
well, Subway was smart because they set up their own doctor's, you know, board or something like that, that they yep. could, you know, create their own organization that right. would, you know, support what they were saying.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Absolutely. Well, I think our, we have a guest in the green room who is
in the green room,
ready to join us. So I'm going to
bring in
Dan Solon. Let's see here.
Dan Solon, come on down.
Hi, Dan. How are you today? Hi.
How are you both?
We're good.
We're great. We're great. Good. We're happy to have you on. Sean and I were just doing a little toast at the beginning of our show, as we always do. We have a little beverage. So just curious, do you have a drink with you today, or are you just drinking water, or
well, you have anything? First of all, just as an observation, it seems to me that your podcast is kind of a socially acceptable excuse for having a drink.
It is.
All right. Now that I understand it. So I do have a drink, but I have to be honest with you. I don't drink.
Okay.
But so I have a prop.
It's a stage prop. Yeah,
it's exactly. a stage prop, but it's real. It's real beer.
Wait, really, hold that up once again. Let us just see that. Is that a, we want to make sure that's actually is a Kingfisher.
Kingfisher. Okay. Yeah.
So whose fridge did you swipe that out of? If you know,
we have a lot of guests who drink. So we,
I see.
Yes.
Well, you're a good host then.
try to be. Yeah. Try to be.
Well, that falls right in line with your upcoming book, Ask. You know, you're trying to find out more about your guests or the people that you're talking to, and meet their needs and find out more about them. So,
all true, but you did start out the right way by asking me if I brought a prop or was drinking. So you're already implementing some of the lessons of my book.
Absolutely,
yeah, Jonathan. Jonathan's a fast learner. He's a good guy. So Dan, before we jump in, let me tell you the teaser that we kicked off the podcast with, so you can live up to the hype. All right.
All right.
Would that be all right?
Yeah, sure. We're going to frame you big time here.
Yes, all right.
So we did. I was going through the media kit, right? And I saw this one line. I was like, ooh, that's a good teaser line. So I came up with the $1 billion sales secret. So simple, it'll leave you speechless.
Like it.
Yeah. All right.
I believe you were a copywriter, one of you in your prior life. So.
Correct.
Sean.
Yeah.
Good job, Sean.
Still do some of it here and there, but mostly I copy chief now. I don't do a lot of my own writing anymore. But so, well, Dan, we're excited to have you. I'm going to let Jonathan, you know, kind of read your bio and tell a little bit about you. And then we're going to jump in and ask some questions about this book.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, Dan, we're happy to have you. Just to give our audience a little background, Dan, you are a New York Times bestselling author of the smartest series of investing books and the smartest sales book you'll ever read. Again, your books have been widely praised by the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. Your co-founder, John, is it Bogle?
Bogle, co-founder of Vanguard, yes.
Okay, yeah. Co-founder of Vanguard. You've appeared on the early show, the O'Reilly Factor, MSNBC's Weekend Economic Review, Fox Business, CNN, Money. I mean, you've kind of made your rounds on all the major networks. And, you know, I was looking at the list of books that are on Amazon from you, you know, after we were emailing back and forth yesterday, quite the quite the accomplishment there. So we're happy to have you on. Your new book, Ask, How to Relate to Anyone, is coming out next month. It's not available yet, but you can pre-order it. It's available next month, I believe in October. And we're going to be giving our audience a little preview of the book because I find this fascinating. I was reading through some of the questions. And as Sean mentioned, this is one of the most important lessons that you can learn in persuasion is the ability to ask the right questions.
So welcome to have you on.
Thank you both. I could rarely live up to that introduction, but I'm going to do my best.
We're going to give you some applause like we give all of our guests.
A little bit.
We don't charge you for that either.
No, thanks.
No charge whatsoever. Okay. Yeah. So, so let's get in. I want to start at the very top, Dan. Why this book? I mean, you've authored a number of books. A lot of your books are focused on in the financial, you know, the investment series. You have written a book on the smartest sales book you'll ever read. So what kind of made you pivot to a book like this? Obviously, I'm sure that plays a lot into your experience in the investment world, but give us a little background before we get started on the book.
Sure. So first, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to spending time with you. I think most of us write through a process of self-discovery and self-awareness. And I have a background. I was a lawyer, and then I was a financial advisor for many years and an author of financial books. And when I was a financial advisor, I had already written two New York Times best-selling books on investing. So I would get a lot of what you would call very warm leads. I mean, people would call. They had already read my book. They were excited to talk to me. Yet I found that my closing, my conversion rate, converting a prospect into a client, wasn't any better than my colleagues who weren't as well known. And I'm a research-oriented person. So I just thought, you know, it's interesting. The way I'm doing this, I'm doing it the way I thought everybody was supposed to do it. Like, this is who I am. This is my background. This is why what I'm saying has a lot of merit. You sit there quietly and make notes and then sign up. And apparently that wasn't well supported or particularly well received. So I took a year to write this book, and it was just eye-opening what I found from the research. The bottom line is everything I was doing could not have been more wrong. And what I didn't know was just an enormous amount of critical information. And it turns out very few people know this information. And to my knowledge, nobody's ever put the research together the way I put it together in Ask.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard like anecdotally a lot of stuff about, you know, some of the ideas that you talk about in this book, but the amount of research you have in here, you know, is just looking through some of the pre-material you sent us, like it's some cool ideas, some cool pieces of research that you found. So I'm curious, like where'd you compile that? I mean, like, tell people, like, I mean, this is not just another kind of fluff book that's principles based without research. This is research based.
So, Sean, you're raising a really good point here, which is most self-help books repeat very simplistic mantras. Mm-hmm. Every time I look in the mirror, I am a better person. And they tell you about visualizing your goal. And so I read every self-help book I could find. And the one thing I noticed that was common to all of them was I couldn't find that they cited any research supporting what they're saying. So it was just kind of the point of view or opinion of that person. And right. I decided that, like my other books, if I was going to write a book and people were going to rely on what I was saying, they had a right to know what research did I have that supported it. So the internet's a wonderful place and you can go and do tremendous amount of peer review research. And that's in I don't know how many hundreds of studies I cited, but I know that most people aren't interested. So I put them in endnotes, but there are a number of people who want to go read the study and say, look, is what he's saying supported by anything? And I wanted to give them a resource so they would have confidence before implementing what I was recommending.
That's cool.
Yeah. That some of the research I want you to, because this was pretty striking to me when I was reading some of the notes that you had from the media sheet, but in your research, you had an aha moment when you uncovered a particular study. This was a Harvard study, and I want you to go into detail about this because this is fascinating, because it gets into the whole psychology of, you know, why it's so important to ask questions, because, well, I'll let you finish that. What's the reason?
You probably could have finished it better than I would. So, you know, in life, I would say, look, there's opinions, and everybody's, you know, we live in a country, fortunately, where you have the First Amendment, right? Everybody is entitled to an opinion. Then there's science, and part of science is math, and part of science is peer review research published in well-reviewed journals, academic journals done at large academic institutions. So there's a pecking order of research. Not all research is created equal. So I often have aha moments like, oh, why didn't I think of that before? So I was doing my research, I was reading hundreds of studies, and I come across this study done at Harvard. And they took 190 participants, gave them smartphones, put them in a room, asked them to bring a friend or relative with them to the experiment. This is the psychology department at Harvard. And they said to them, we're going to hook you up to an fMRI, which is a functional MRI. And for those in your listening audience who don't know what that is, it measures brain activity in real time. So Sean and Jonathan, if you were hooked up now, I could tell if I was a neuroscientist, what part of your brain is responding to what I'm saying. And we know different regions of the brain respond to different stimuli. So pain, pleasure, and everything in between. So they hook these people up and they give them a smartphone. And the first experiment, all they say to them is, we want you just to talk about yourself. We don't care what you say. Go into this cubicle, talk about yourself. So they do that, then they look at the functional MRI, and they're stunned to find that the prefrontal cortex, the section of the brain that records pleasure, is lit up in a way indistinguishable from the way it's lit up when people are experiencing the pleasures that most of us think really would cause us a tremendous amount of pleasure, like sex, addictive drugs, a wonderful meal, whatever. Well, talking about yourself, it turns out, is as pleasurable for people as the most pleasurable activities that humans engage in. Wow. And then they did a follow-up study, and the follow-up study was, we want you to talk into these smartphones, what you're saying is so important that we're going to share it with the friend or relative that you brought with you. And when they looked at the functional MRIs, they found it lit up even more than it did when they didn't think it was going to be shared with anyone. The conclusion was inescapable that when we're talking about ourselves and sharing our stories, our experiences with other people, it is an immensely pleasurable activity. So I looked at that research in the context of all my other research. And all I could think about was all those times when I was talking about myself to a hapless prospect who's just sitting there looking at me blankly. And I thought, what if I flipped the script? What if I went out and to the prospect, never said anything that was declarative, never talked about myself, my background, my experience, just encouraged that person to talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. By saying, so, Jonathan, tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. Sean, tell me about yourself. And then as you started talking, just asked you nice, soft follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. And what I found was transformational. I did this for about 6 months to a year. And I tracked my sales, my conversion rate. So just to give you some hard numbers, in the 5 years prior to doing this experiment, which I tracked for a full 1 year. So in the 5 years prior, I had generated about $55 million of assets under management, which is the metric by which advisors are measured, because you're paid based on assets under management. The first year I did this new process, never tried to sell, never tried to persuade, just got people to talk about themselves. I attracted $100 million of assets under management in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's a big difference. But what's cool about this, Dan, is this is not just for sales, right? I mean, you tell a story in the book about a father and a son. Can you go into that a little bit? I thought that was a really cool story to show how just learning this skill can apply to a lot of areas, not just sales.
You know, I don't want to overstate this by saying I think the key to life is asking questions, but I think the key to life is asking questions. If you want to have deeper relationships with anyone, personal, professional, social, with your business colleagues, switch your brain from conveying information, which all of us do, to eliciting information from other people. So I give a lot of talks, and after one of my talks, his father came up to me and he said, I'm about to go to lunch with my son. We have a very strained relationship. He wants to be a graphic designer, and I want him to come into my advisory business. And it's caused a tremendous breach in our relationship, and we barely talk to each other. Would this process that you've just described work in that context? I said it works in all contexts. So all I want you to do is ask him how his graphic design studies are going, and then follow up by asking him sincere, genuine questions like, what's it like for you when you're designing? What would you like to, where would you like to take this? Why do you get so much satisfaction from it? So he did that, and he said it, and he sent me this lovely email where they both cried and hugged, and it was just the most wonderful resolution, because it was probably the first time the son felt that his father genuinely cared about him as a person. And that's all any of us want. And it's very, very rare to have that experience.
Yeah, for sure. So let me play devil's advocate for a second, because I like to do that sometimes. So let's say that you're in a situation where you have someone, because I can use an example. I deal with a lot of engineers in the background that I'm in. And I find it interesting that engineers are kind of quirky sometimes, and you start asking them questions. Sometimes they shut down. Sometimes they don't want to answer. So I know that there are people out there that really aren't interested in answering questions, and maybe they're just not very talkative people. How do you deal with situations like that when you're trying to ask someone a question and they kind of shut down? Those are kind of difficult moments.
So is the context of your question a personal relationship or a business relationship?
Business.
So, and is the further context of it, you're trying to sell them something, you're in a commercial relationship?
Yeah, and I think it's, the situation would be even just breaking ground, you know, not simply asking questions that are related. I mean, honestly, you know, there are times where you deal with people that you try to break ground with just simple, basic questions of, you know, what's going on? How's your family? What do you enjoy? What are some of your interests? And people kind of, they may answer you, but they may not go into detail. They may give you simple answers. and those are kind of rare. I think you're right. And most people do like talking about themselves, but every now and then you get some people who are really reserved about who they, what they do, what they enjoy, what they like. And so those are kind of challenging.
I have had your exact experience. It's a great question, by the way. I've had exactly that experience. So when I was doing my experiment, my year of trying this, an engineer came in, a prospect, and I said, so tell me about yourself. And he looked at me and he said, listen, Dan, I don't have time for small talk. I have 10 questions. I'd be really grateful if you just answer them.
Right.
That is a win in my process, because my job is not to impose something on somebody who doesn't want it.
Right.
But in a business context, it's to find out what they want rather than assuming I know what they want and then deal with their agenda rather than imposing my agenda.
Right.
So the way I handled that was I said, this is great. Start with your first question and then let's go through all 10.
Sure.
He asked me 10 questions. I gave him 10 answers. I said, anything else you want to talk about? He said, no, I'd like to know how to proceed. I said, great, sign. We're all set.
So that kind of allows you to just skip ahead in the process, where some people might feel that that's they're on shaky ground. The point is just to keep moving forward.
Skip ahead in the process. I want to be really careful here.
Yeah.
The process is not, I'm going to ask you questions whether or not you're interested in answering questions. That's not the process. The process is eliciting information from other people.
Right.
For 90% of the people you meet, they're going to want to talk about themselves. Right. But you never want to impose on anyone. So you just want to find out what they do want to talk about. So another way of handling the situation you posited, Jonathan, would be to say, when you start that, you're in a commercial situation, you feel it's not going well. Mm-hmm. You look at the other person, you say, what would you like to talk about?
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great question. And
you don't want to ask them a question of why they're not answering your questions, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert, right? Which means I'm not excited about answering other people's questions, and I'm not excited about talking about myself. I'm really not. So introverts, generally, we don't like to do that. Mm-hmm. So if somebody sensitive is dealing with me and they've read my book, they're going to understand that I'm not keen to do this. And they're going to say, so Dan, tell me what's on your mind.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly powerful in a commercial situation because almost nobody does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a mentor tell me, I'm also a coach, and, whether I do this in coaching or consulting, either one, a mentor told me, it's like the first question you should ask when you get somebody like on a phone call, because a lot of my stuff's done virtually, is why are we on the call? Tell me why you think we're on the call.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like people will go for 5 to 10 minutes, just like, and I'm just taking notes. And then my next question is, what else? Mm-hmm. And I take another 5 minutes worth of notes and I have everything I need to understand where they're at, where they want to go, all this kind of stuff with these two very simple questions.
Yeah.
So now you can add something else to kind of your intellectual arsenal when that's going on, Sean.
Cool.
You're asking them these questions and they're talking for 5 and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So now you know that what's happening chemically to their brain is the following. Prefrontal cortex is lit up. Mm-hmm. And two hormones, one is oxytocin and one is dopamine, they're both very pleasurable hormones, are flooding into the prefrontal cortex. This makes them very, very happy. That's why they get so much pleasure from talking. So one of my kind of mantras is, when you're talking, you're losing. When they're talking, you're winning. So the longer they're talking, the more of the hormones are coming into their prefrontal cortex, the happier they are. And then a very weird thing happens. They project onto you all kinds of qualities that you may or may not have because you're one of the few people in their life who has ever empowered them to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
So they'll often say to you, I so enjoyed this conversation. When often there wasn't a conversation. It was just you letting them talk.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, that brings up a thought in my head. Based on the research, you obviously read lots of research. I'm curious, does it matter what they're talking about? Like sometimes in coaching situations, like it feels a little negative and a little down and things like that, because they're coming usually with a problem, right? I would think in financial advising, most people don't seek out a new advisor unless they're unhappy with current results. So does it matter if they're kind of talking positive or negative? Do they still get the pleasure chemical?
It, as long as they're talking and expressing themselves, mm-hmm. they're feeling good about themselves and about you, whether they're talking about something positive or negative. If they're talking about something negative, you're going to be saying to them, tell me more about that. Tell me why you reacted that way. Tell me why that makes you feel so bad.
How that affected you. Tell me how that affects you.
Tell me how that affected you.
Yeah.
All of this is just like taking a bottle of oxytocin, mm-hmm. having some kind of a shunt into their brain, pouring it through a filter, and it goes into their brain and they're like, oh, I love this. This is great.
Yeah, let me hook you up to an oxytocin IV here in our conversation.
Exactly. Oxytocin, by the way, is the hormone that when women give birth, it's the bonding hormone that causes them to bond with their children. Men also experience this with their newborns, but it's been colloquially called like the love hormone. When there's oxytocin, mm-hmm. we tend to be more trusting. We tend to like the other person. That's what makes the lessons in ASK so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So we got oxytocin, we got dopamine. I mean, we got all these things going on. I mean, it's probably, it's similar to, you know, I think, you know, social media, people on social media, when they get likes or whatever to certain posts and things like that, you know, it's probably the same chemicals that are going on.
Right. Cause it's about them really.
Right.
Every exactly. time they get a like, it's about them.
Exactly. Well,
so there was a study, I actually cite this in my book. I think it says 85% of the communications on social media are self-directed, right? It's about, I mean, when I look at social media, again, as an introvert who would never share about myself,
right?
All I'm thinking is, this is like the essence of oversharing, right? I mean, people are putting out to strangers the most intimate details of their life.
Yep.
But that's why they do it, because they find it, what they're saying is,
yeah.
Oh, this is great. All I have to do is go to my computer, type, it goes on the internet, other people read it and comment on it. It's all about me. Yeah. This is wonderful.
Yeah, that's cool. So I'm curious, Dan, are you married?
Yes.
How long have you been married?
I'm sorry that we're on air because I can't get the exact number of years.
Ballpark it.
25 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like when you started doing this research, did you test anything out on your spouse? And if so, like, did she like start saying, hey, why are you asking so many questions all of a sudden? And,
Or does she know you too well for that? Right. Like, yeah, I'm not, don't try that on me.
I actually learned this from her. She is also an introvert. She hates talking about herself. And I did notice early on in our relationship, she would ask me all these questions. But I just thought it was like a pleasant part of her personality. I didn't realize that it was supported by so much research. So to your point, I'm telling you and your listeners, I don't care how well your spouse or other loved one knows you. If you go home and try this, as long as you don't ask cross-examination type questions, right? But show a genuine, how was your day? And they say, I had ptomaine poisoning, was throwing up all day. And you say, what time is dinner? Which is the way most communication goes. If you say, how was your day? And he or she says, it was great. I did this. And then you say, which most people do not, well, tell me more about that.
Right. Like,
what was fun about that? If you do that, what's going to happen is they're going to be so happy and their brain is going to be so on fire. They are not going to say, why are you asking me so many questions all of a sudden? That's what everybody thinks will happen.
Right. We talk about that a lot on the show. Like when you get really into persuasion tactics or techniques or science that work, like people can't bypass it, like, because it does something to the brain, like you're talking about. The chemicals are so strong that the rational mind can't really overcome the chemical cocktails that are going on. I mean, would you agree with that, Dan?
I totally agree, Sean. Science works, right? So you drop a match in kerosene, you're going to get a fire.
Yep.
And that's all I'm really talking about here.
Yep.
Yeah, I try to, you know, I do the cheesy questions with my wife, like the old, the old sales questions where they used to teach you to ask the questions that you have to ask are the ones that elicit the yes response.
Yeah.
And she sees right through that, you know, so it's like, I do it in fun and jest.
You know, this is important though, in that people have a tremendous sensitivity to being manipulated.
Yes.
And that's why none of the lessons in ask work if you're insincere.
Right.
By the way, I know that both of you are very interested in persuasion. So there also is a science on persuasion and a chemical reaction. And the chemical reaction is this: when we sense that we're being persuaded about anything, cortisol, which is the stress hormone you measure in the saliva and blood, goes up. And there are studies that show how incredibly nuanced this is. Mm-hmm. Even when you're not real, well, I'll give you one quick study. They have two groups of people soliciting donations. One is paid hourly, the other gets a commission. They're both doing it by telephone and they're both reading from the same script. The one that's paid hourly consistently generates more donations than the one that's on a commission. because people can sense when they're being sold and persuaded. I think we all think we're smarter than we are, and we tend to think we're smarter than the person we're talking to. This is a tremendous mistake.
Yeah, I think at least in my days of, you know, face-to-face selling, we called that commission breath. Right. It goes through the phone too, though.
Yeah.
It goes. Sorry, Jonathan, almost made you spit your beer there.
Yeah, just about.
So, Dan, like, we've talked a lot about kind of what you've learned as far as the understanding of persuasion and asking questions and asking the right type of questions with the right intent. What's the biggest misunderstanding that you came across in your research?
I think the biggest misunderstanding is that people are interested in what we have to say, and they're interested in particularly our stories, and that therefore we have to, when we're meeting somebody, be entertaining, charming, engaging. The reality is that people have, even with people like all of us, who we have an expertise, people actually pay money to come to us, presumably to hear what we have to say. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's really important to understand is, even in that context, they are not interested in what we have to say.
Yeah.
They are interested in how we can solve a problem that they have.
Sure.
And our job is to find out what that is. That's the single biggest misunderstanding. So when you read all this advice, which is can be boiled down to this, tell your story. Stories are interesting. It's true. Stories are more interesting than just talking. Mm. But your job is to get the other person to tell their story. They have very little interest in hearing yours.
Hmm. Yeah. Is there a, I don't know how to, I wouldn't call it a, when you're looking at it from a series of questions, but how do you know in a, and I'm mostly asking this from a, obviously from a business standpoint, when you're meeting with someone, a prospect, what type of questions are the right questions? And what type of questions are probably questions you shouldn't ask? Because, you know, some questions can be too, you know, you talk about, some people like to talk about their family, you know, initially to, as kind of a groundbreaking question. Some people don't like to talk about anything personal. It, like you said earlier, let's get right to business. Is there a way to kind of gauge that in the initial interaction when you're first meeting someone?
So I guess that's a, that question has a number of subparts, but
yeah.
I think initially before you meet a prospect, I don't understand why people don't spend time doing some basic research on social media. I mean, there's so much there.
Yeah.
I mean, surely you would react differently to, you'd ask different questions to somebody who just had a death in the family and is a widow or widower than somebody who just started up a new tech company. So do your homework and find out who it is who's before you. Second, this comes with experience, but I can pretty much tell, and I know you're going to ask me to tell with the two of you, but I can pretty much tell whether somebody's an introvert or an extrovert as soon as I meet them. And a lot of people are in the middle, called ambiverts. So if I sense somebody is an introvert, and I get a reluctance to my typical, the good questions, which are general open-ended questions, not questions intended to drive the conversation in a certain direction. I want general questions like, tell me about yourself. I don't want questions like, what's your experience investing been like? That's my subject. It may not be theirs.
Right.
So if it's an introvert and I get, you know, a little bit of pushback, that is when I segue over to, so tell me what's on your mind.
Sure.
And so extrovert, you can just sit back and relax.
Yeah.
So we probably shouldn't ask questions like, what's your mother's maiden name? What was your first pet's name?
Right. What's your social security number?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where the cortisol goes up, right?
Yeah, that's definitely. There's this cool tool on LinkedIn. We were talking about like researching. I don't know if you've seen it, Dan, but for our listeners, I think we mentioned this once before, but it's called Crystal, and it's like built into to LinkedIn. And it actually tells you like the personality type of the LinkedIn user. It's pretty cool. And like, it tells you, do they want short, snappy replies? Do they want, you know, do they like to ramble? Like it's pretty cool little tool. So you can get an idea of that. So yeah, I just, that popped into my head. I wanted to share that with people while we were.
How do you access it on LinkedIn?
It's in your, it automatically is on your messenger tab, like the inbox messaging. And you have to sign up for like a paid account if you want like the extra features. But just as soon as you start typing a response to somebody that's in your inbox, it'll start to say whether or not it's, and Gmail's doing this too. They can show whether you're happy, like if the tone of your email is happy, angry, analytical, like all these different things. But the cool thing about Crystal is that it's tailored to that person because it grabs all their social media data, and through AI, it analyzes what type of conversation they like. So pretty cool.
I didn't know that. It's great information. I can't wait to take a look.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to look at. And, you know, instead of copying and pasting the same, you know, prospecting message, you can tailor to the different types of personality. So really cool stuff. So a couple questions for our list, you know, that our listeners are probably wondering is like, so the book's not out yet, but how can I start using some of this like right now? Like, what are some of the things I can start doing right now until the book comes out and I can buy the book? But like, what can they be doing right now to persuade and ask the right kinds of questions?
So a lot of this is making a fundamental change in the way you relate to other people. And as I indicated, most people are geared, even when they're listening, they're not really listening. They're just waiting for the other person to stop talking so they can start talking, right? It's called competitive listening. So if you can train yourself to put your agenda aside and just genuinely focus on the other person, in a way that is sincere, people can sense that you're genuinely interested. That involves developing a trait that very, very few people in my experience have. And it's a trait that correlates very highly with success. I always say that when I meet a new financial advisor at a talk, let's say, I can tell within a couple of minutes whether they're going to be successful. Because I look for this one trait, and the trait is curiosity. If you're genuinely curious about other people, look, learning about the two of you is much more interesting than me talking about myself. There's nothing about myself I don't already know.
Sure.
So I'm just bored if all I'm going to do is talk about myself. Learning about you and how you started this podcast and how it relates to craft beer, I mean, that's really interesting to me. And so every time I meet somebody, I view it as an opportunity to like expand my horizons by learning from them.
Mm-hmm. Those are good questions. We ask how that came about too. The craft beer and the podcast.
What's the answer?
So it's very organic. It's Jonathan and I used to live in the same town. So on Friday afternoons, as often as possible, we'd meet at the local pub and it's called Casual Pints, like a franchise pub for the suburbs. Not like a New York City or Chicago pub, like a fake one, but they have good beer, good selection. And we'd sit and we just talk about our week. You know, Jonathan's in sales and marketing and, you know, stuff. I'm in copywriting, coaching, consulting. And we would just talk about our week and what we learned and that kind of stuff. And we're like, man, this would make a good podcast. Mm-hmm. And since we were literally at a place that, you know, we were like, what are some names? And, because I'm a copywriter, you know, it had to be alliterated to work. Like it doesn't work if it's not alliterated.
Right.
So we came up with Persuasion by the Pint. We're, as soon as I said it, we were both like, that's it. We even got the t-shirts. Jonathan's wearing his t-shirt today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So that's what we do. Like we bring guests on or it's just us. And when we have a guest on, it's like three people sitting at a table, sharing a pint and talking about sales, marketing, and persuasion.
So go back to when I asked you how it started and right before you started telling me, because it is a really interesting story and background. Can you just take your mental temperature as you were telling me how it started with the two of you? How did you feel talking about it?
Yeah, it's exciting because it does. It feels like energetic, and that drip starts dripping. And it's like, oh, he's asking about me and something cool that I've done, and you know, it makes me feel proud, makes me feel, you know, worthy. Like a lot of stuff comes up for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the other things to keep in mind, that in case I haven't already persuaded people to stop talking and start listening, but humans have a notoriously short attention span. By some, it's a controversial study by Microsoft, says it's roughly 8 seconds. Slightly better studies say that after 9 minutes, our brain kind of tunes out. And try to remember when you were in college and, you know, listening to a lecture, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, here's the data point that changed it for me. Right now I'm talking, you're listening. I talk at about 100 to 125 words a minute. Your brain can process at about 500 words a minute, which means I'm only engaging 20% of your brain. However, when you're talking, try this at home. Try talking or have a conversation with somebody and try to come up with an extraneous thought, like I'm trying to do it right now. I can't, right? Because talking occupies 100% of your bandwidth, of your brain's bandwidth. Mm. People think the brain has this tremendous capacity. It does, but the brain is serial. It thinks serially. So when I'm talking, can't think about anything else. Think of the ramifications of that, which I did, and it was very simple. Everybody wants, every salesperson, if you say, what do you want? What do you want to achieve in this meeting? They'll say, I want to engage the other person. And I'll say, how do you want to do that? And they'll say, I want them to be really interested in what I have to say. And I'll say, that pretty much guarantees you will not engage them.
Yeah, right.
You want to engage them? I've done this with a room of 500 people. I said, I can engage every one of you. 100% on any subject I want. They say, how? I say, okay, I want you to think about your best vacation. I want you to write down on a piece of paper where it was, why it was a great vacation. They do that. While they're doing that, then when they're done, I say, how engaged were you? Mm-hmm. All of them are completely engaged. We engage sure. people by empowering them to interact with us, mm-hmm. not by trying to be so charming and engaging ourselves that they're just transfixed with what I have to say, sure. which is what I thought was the way the game should be played. It's not really a game.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because I think because I've done so much face-to-face selling and copywriting and other things, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to use this in print. In print, I mean online or offline, to engage people more. I've always, because I had a background in sales and I knew how important that was just instinctively, because that's when you made more sales. I'm like, how do you do that online? Like without chat? And I think that's why chat is so popular. And there's people that are proving you can sell a lot more on chat than you can on a sales page.
Yeah.
Even with and it's usually AI based. It's not even like real people. So it's interesting when you start to think about it, like how do you involve more people? And I know when I do webinars, I ask a lot of questions and try to get the comment, the chat role to just start like, hey, where's everybody calling from? Tell me what city you're in. What's the weather like? And it sounds so like ridiculous, but people love it. Like they love saying where they're at. They love saying the temperature. And it sounds cheesy even when I do it, but like the chat role just lights up and people feel involved and they feel heard and all this stuff. And, you know, I try to pause every 10, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, probably that 9 minute thing is probably like, I've probably intuitively kind of figured that out. I'll ask people like, so what are you hearing? Tell me, type in the chat, what are you hearing right now? And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I really love everything that you're doing. You're definitely on the right track. I mean, we're all doing many more webinars now because we can't travel and we can't do live talks, right? So when I'm asked to do a webinar, the typical webinar is a talking head, PowerPoint slides. Mm-hmm. At the end of 55 minutes, any questions, a few questions, right? So I thought through webinars using the principles in ASK, and I said, look, I'm not going to do any webinars that are structured that way. The webinars we will do is when you send out the invitation, You'll say, Dan's going to be talking on this subject. Give him three questions that you want to be sure he addresses, three issues that are important to you. And they have to do that before they register, right?
That's great. Yeah, that,
we get hundreds of questions. And the entire webinar is like a Q&A session. It's like, so Sean, you asked, I see that you asked this question. And I have the right, the kind of power to say, before I answer that question, give me a little context. What situation are you talking about? Then Sean types in something. So now we've got something going. Then I answer those questions. And then the whole webinar is that. There's no presentation. The line I have is, Dan wants me to, the sponsor says that, Dan wants me to tell you this is not a presentation interrupted by your questions. It's your questions interrupted by a presentation.
That's awesome.
So your job is to ask questions.
So that brings up another question for me that maybe you stumbled across in your research. And that is, in a setting like that, where there's, 100, 150 people, how does that affect people's brain when they're listening? So they're not being questioned and they're not talking. They're kind of a participant and they're watching the back and forth. Because it does seem like people get value from that. So I'm curious, if you ran across any research or if you have any, hypotheses on that.
So on a spectrum of total boredom and total engagement, total boredom is sitting listening for a protracted period of time to anyone else speaking, particularly somebody who's lecturing or, giving a presentation. Right. Total engagement at the other end of the spectrum is you're talking. That's total engagement.
Okay.
Somewhere in between, however, is listening to other people talking in an interactive way, because your brain is not passively listening. It goes through this process. Oh, I agree with what he said, and I'm thinking of saying the same thing, or I'm going to disagree with that, and I'm going to respond. Yeah. So interactivity stimulates the brain into an active mode, and that's the goal.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I found that group coaching can be as or more effective than one-on-one coaching.
Really?
Yeah. So because I think that's, my theory on that, and a lot of other coaches would agree, is that when it's not about you, there's less defenses. So you're more open to hearing the message and hearing the feedback from the coach.
Yes. And the other thing I find when I do, because I do a lot of video conference coaching, which I've always done, and now especially, right? So you can say, so I hear you, Sean. Jonathan, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, you can going in a group, and anybody who doesn't agree with that, well, how do you feel about that, right? So it's just another way to stimulate a lot of conversation, all of which is good.
Yeah, Jonathan, I mean, that'd be great for you for your boardrooms. Like if one guy's, talking a lot, which typically happens in a boardroom or a decision-making room, you can usually tell by body language that somebody else either agrees or doesn't agree, and be like, depending on which way you want to go with it, it's like, hey, Sam, what do you think about, what Dennis is saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a good tip, Dan. I like that.
Yeah. In those multi-level organizations where you have to get buy-in from a lot of people, that's a great strategy to get everyone in one room.
Yeah.
So let's, we're right at an hour, Dan. So, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. I could keep going for hours. Real quick, I was thinking earlier, so I'm going to do a little side tangent here. I was thinking about what you were saying, Dan, the asking good questions. And I was immediately Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss came to mind. There's probably two of the best, most well-known podcasts. Howard Stern is another. And those guys are brilliant at asking questions. And they're the highest rated podcasts. I mean, literally worth $125, $150 million deals.
Even Larry King back in the day, if you watch a lot of his old clips from back in the day when he had his own program, I think he still does, but it's not as big, but he was always one of the best at asking questions to any of his guests. And he always, it's like you said, he always looked like he was just super interested. You have some interviewers that they're always trying to talk over the interviewee, and they don't really care about what they say, but Larry King always had this look of just intense interest in any guest that he had on his program.
So here's a line that I use because I've asked people over the years. I've said, tell me, you heard me speak. Tell me what stayed with you like a week later, because people really don't retain a lot. They'll retain two or three major points. The one line that seems to stay with people is, your job when you're interacting with others is not to be the most interesting person. It's to be the most interested.
Sure.
That line really does stay. Now, keep in mind, if you're a narcissist, it's very difficult to implement ask because you have no interest in other people.
Right.
But for most of the world, you just have to put them on this path. And the most common feedback I get is this was transformational right from the get-go. As soon as they try it with anybody, they find first of all, it reduces stress enormously. You know how stressful these sales situations are. I used to find it very stressful. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, when I was still doing it, instead of being all revved up and having to get through materials, it was just talk about anything you want to talk about. Whatever questions you have, if you have them, I'm happy to answer them. If you don't, then let's see what happens. Then we end with, how would you like to proceed?
That's brilliant. It gives me some insight onto, like, you know, the most interesting man in the world ad series from Dos Equis.
Yeah.
At first I was thinking earlier, I was like, well, that's kind of the wrong way to approach it. But now, like, I can see why that was so successful is because people want to be that guy that gets to talk about himself, gets to tell his stories about travel and all this other stuff. You want to be that guy. You want to be the most interesting man in the world. So I could see why that worked so well.
So the problem here, Sean, is, and it's another line I have, which is you can be the smartest person in the room or you can get the business. It's very difficult to achieve both.
Right.
So one of the things you have to give up is exactly that desire to be the most interesting person in the world. You have to give that up. Yep. If your goal is to have deeper, more meaningful relationships or to convert a prospect into a client, it seems to me, it was for me, well worth it to give up. I don't think I ever was the most interesting person, but even if I was, I would happily give it up for that look I see in people's eyes when I say to them, tell me more about that. I often say this to audiences, I'll say, listen, was there ever a time in your entire life, there are hundreds of you here, you're interesting, high-achieving people. Was there ever a time in your entire life where you said something that you thought was really interesting? And the other, like you climbed a mountain, you took a great trip, whatever. And the other person stopped, looked at you and said, tell me more about that. Rarely does a hand go up.
Sure.
Really. And that's the person I want people who read my book to be.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's great.
It's so simple. Like, I mean, like you said, if you can just get out of your own way and remove yourself, it goes back to kind of the hero's journey, and you don't want to be the hero. You want your client, your prospect to be the hero. You're not Luke Skywalker, you're Yoda.
Right.
And you want them to be the hero. So you want to hear their story, their transformation, their desires, their wants, their needs, all that stuff. And when you do that, they see you as the master and the mentor automatically.
Exactly. A great summary.
All right, Dan. Well, this has been fantastic. As Sean said, we're over an hour, but it's time flies by when you are asking really good questions. I think that's what we've been doing. So I will say, just to sum up your book, I can't wait till it comes out, because I think that we've been talking mostly from a business standpoint, but I think I've got two teenagers, and if you want to see something more challenging than a sales environment, try negotiating with a couple of teenagers. And I'll say that whenever I do, engage them, Stephen Covey always said, seek first to understand, then to be understood. When I've always engaged them in questions, asking them about things that they're interested in, not things that I want them to tell me, but things that really catch their interest, I get a lot further with them when it comes to, give and take. And that age is really tricky. So
great example. Thanks for having me on. By the way, if I can just do a little plug, you can,
sure.
Coming out October 8th. You can pre-order now at askdansolon.com.
Perfect.
But you'll be able to order on Amazon and everywhere else starting October 8th.
Thank you, Dan. We'll be posting a link on our show page once we publish. And we would encourage all of our listeners to pre-order. Sounds like a fantastic book. I'm looking forward to getting a copy. I guess it'll be on, Sean and I like to listen a lot on Audible books, and I'm pretty certain that'll be on Audible as well.
It is.
Great. Yes.
Yep. Very cool. Okay. Yeah. All right. So Dan, can you hang on a minute? We're going to do a wrap.
Sure.
If you can hang out in the green room, we'll come back to you.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been fun.
Sean, that was perfect. Great episode there. I'm looking forward to it, getting a copy of this.
Yep.
Again, October, we'll be putting a link on our show page. So I would encourage our listeners to get a copy. And any closing thoughts?
Ask more questions.
That's the premise, right?
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
All right, guys. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of our podcast platforms. And if you have questions, ask or send us a question and reach out to us over at persuasionbythepint.com. Find our contact page. And thanks again, everyone. We look forward to seeing you next week.
See ya.